Hey, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I'm just popping in to tell you that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Vermont is one of only two states in the nation that allows people convicted of felonies to vote while incarcerated and after incarceration with no exceptions, unless the crime is related to elections or voting. Maine is the other state that never disenfranchises people convicted of felonies. And Canada also allows people to vote regardless of their criminal convictions. In the rest of the United States, it's a patchwork of laws and regulations. And sometimes people who have served their time are allowed to vote if they follow certain bureaucratic steps, but they don't always know their rights. This issue has surfaced in the public consciousness recently as a question in the Democratic presidential primary campaign. Senator Bernie Sanders told a CNN town hall that he supports the rights of convicted felons to vote, even while in prison. Other presidential candidates have sidestepped the issue or have said they support some restrictions. Today on the show, we're going to look at the issue and how it came to be that Vermont does not disenfranchise people convicted of crimes, even while in prison. And we'll look at how that works, practically speaking. Joining us for this conversation are Alec Ewald, Associate Professor of Political Science at UVM. He researches voting rights, including felony disenfranchisement, and Deb Markowitz, who served for 12 years as Vermont's Secretary of State. During that time, she worked to set up the state's absentee voting program for prisons. It's a pleasure to have both of you on the show for this conversation today. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Professor Ewald, can you talk a little bit about why and what this patchwork looks like around the country of the different ways that people can or can't vote and maybe can or can't after they've been in prison?
The why is hard. It's been a long developing sort of legal system in the United States. Many elements of our elections do vary by state. But we're really seeing this extraordinary time of reform right now where a number of states, probably about 20, have expanded the franchise or changed their voting rules for people with felony convictions or people with backgrounds. But we're also seeing, and you mentioned this just now, but we're also seeing a better understanding of the problem of information. That is, I mean, it's a question of exclusion and democratic inclusion, but it's also a question of what people know about their rights. And so the bottom line is that most people with felony convictions in the United States are actually eligible to vote. Many of them don't know it. Many people in state and local government may not know it in their different states. And what documents you would need to prove eligibility might also be unclear. So, yeah.
Are most people who are serving time for a felony able to vote while they're in prison, or is that where most of it comes down to?
No. So, again, there's really a true spectrum where in Maine and Vermont, people incarcerated never lose the right to vote. And then there are still about a dozen states where at least some people are indefinitely disqualified afterward. It's just Iowa and Kentucky where first-time felons are automatically disqualified. But then the rest of the states are spread across this range where in a lot of states, people on probation can vote, but people on parole can't, for example. There's about a dozen states where as long as you're not incarcerated, you're eligible to vote. And from an administrative perspective, that's the easiest thing to impose if you are going to disqualify people who are in prison.
How do you think philosophically about this? And what do you think about Vermont and Maine being the only two states that don't disenfranchise people who are convicted of felonies, again, unless it's a crime directly related to voting or elections, which I don't know if has ever happened?
I would ask a former Secretary of State if she were available behind
Gee,
a potted plant.
It's too bad we don't have one. Deb Markowitz, have you ever even seen a crime in Vermont where somebody was convicted of a felony related to elections that then would disenfranchise them?
That's interesting. We have had a couple of cases that were brought against people who sort of inadvertently broke the election law. One notable case during my time was a fellow who came in and voted for his dad because his dad was sick and he had the list of things that his
dad voted in his dad's name.
Yeah, he came to, you know, and that ultimately wasn't prosecuted because it was, you know, sort of a good faith error. And it was prosecuted, but it was settled. So I don't know of a case like this.
Huh.
It's not to say it hasn't happened, but I would bet that There's in the same way folks aren't aware, you know, in other states that they can vote. In Vermont, my guess is a person wouldn't be aware. And the elections, the people running the elections also wouldn't be aware that they shouldn't be on the checklist.
Huh. Interesting. All right. So the point still stands that basically in Vermont, you are not disenfranchised regardless of your crime. Deb Markowitz, how did you think about this during your time as Secretary of State as you were working on this program, sort of philosophically, this idea that you should retain your right to vote regardless of what crime you've committed?
Well, you know, it's interesting when you know, I don't know how many people listening actually saw the conversation with Bernie Sanders when he was being interviewed about this. And it was something that it looked to me like he'd really never thought of before. We take it for granted in Vermont that everybody gets to vote and that more voting is a good thing for society and for our communities. And so I have to say, before I get to your specific answer, you know, I was surprised that other states had rules against felon voting. It just didn't seem logical.
And because why? Because,
well, because I think, you know, there's different reasons why we put people in prison and we charge them with crimes. But generally speaking, the philosophy in Vermont has been that we want prisoners to reform, to be able to come back into society and be productive members of society. And with that goal in mind, allowing prisoners to vote and to do other socially encouraged and acceptable activities that link them to the community, it actually strengthens their social ties, lets them think about the common good, and promotes ultimately sort of responsible participation in civil society. And that is for us the goal. I mean, we want to keep people safe as well. We want to make sure that there's some deterrence so other people don't commit crimes. But ultimately, in Vermont, the philosophy in our criminal justice system has been that we want to make we want to provide opportunities for people in jail to end up reintegrating into society. And I think it's notable that at the time I was Secretary of State and was thinking about this, Sister Janice Ryan, a nun, was the Commissioner of Corrections. Hmm. And, you know, and she very strongly brought this philosophy to bear and was a great partner as we were thinking about, you know, well, you know, if people in prison have the rights to vote, let's make that a real thing. At the same time, there's a group called Vermont Protection and Advocacy, and they work with inmates they've focused some in more recent times on inmates who have disabilities. But they had a grant at the time that allowed them to partner with us to go into the prisons, Vermont's jails and prisons, to register voters and to make sure that this opportunity to vote by absentee ballot was real and meaningful, and that people knew about it and could choose to exercise their rights.
Let's go to Tim, who's calling in from Plainfield. Hi, Tim. Share your thoughts with us.
So my basic thought is, as citizens, we have rights and responsibilities that we have to adhere to. And when you break the law, you lose certain rights. If you drive drunk, you lose the right to drive. So my main point is, if you break the law, you know, you lose the right. If you go to jail, you reform yourself, you get out, then you should have that right restored.
So you believe that people should lose the right to vote while they're incarcerated, but should have the opportunity to have it restored if they complete their parole or probation?
Absolutely.
Tim, thanks for your perspective. Appreciate that. We're hearing from others as well. Paulette says, this should be the right of every citizen regardless. Kevin says, if they're counted as population in a congressional district, they should be able to vote, whether in jail or not. And Stephen says, out of jail, no problems. In jail, no rights. Randy's calling in from Rutland. Randy, you have a personal perspective on this?
Hi, I'm a former inmate. I like Tim, by the way. Thank you, Tim. I went to jail for a DUI, and I was allowed to vote in jail, and I felt very privileged. And I think that, you know, with democracy the way it is, your vote counts. it doesn't matter where you come from. I have not reoffended in a very long time, and I can still vote even though I'm out. Thank you, Lord. But I think everyone should be allowed to vote. It doesn't matter. You know, people can change. The situation can change. And thanks for allowing me to talk.
Randy, before you go, when you voted while you were in prison, why did you want to exercise that right? And were there issues that you thought, look, I need my voice to be heard from prison on this particular issue? Or was it more that, no, I want to be able to vote for my representative. I want to be able to vote for president. You know, I'm still a citizen.
You know, when you're in jail, you have no rights, you know, and that was one right that I felt I could, you know, I had. And a lot of people looked at me like, why are you voting, blah, blah, you know, and I get that. They don't care, but some people do care. So I felt like I had to exercise my right. I cannot put down our government if I don't take a vote.
Yeah, Randy, thanks for sharing your perspective, Randy, who voted while incarcerated and looking at it from that sort of personal inside, literally inside perspective. Professor Ewald, what is the argument for disenfranchising people?
Yeah, I think Tim articulated this kind of social contract idea that if you break the rules, you don't get to help make the rules. my view of that is that that is a sort of deep foundational idea, and it's a very principled reason for this restriction. But that's not really how we think about rights today. We think about restricting rights that are necessary to punishment, that we limit somebody's ability to read certain things or have certain kinds of conversations if that's part of punishment, or that are necessary to protect public safety in some way. And I still don't see what the public safety threat is from somebody voting. The other thing that I think Tim might be alluding to is the idea that there's a real body politic, and that that body can be made sicker or made healthier by the individual things that people do, and that when we vote, we're participating together in that community sort of collective behavior. And it doesn't feel good to some people to know, like, as if this person is in the voting booth with them. But I think Deb Markowitz articulated really well a kind of response to that, which is about the formative potential of voting. And that, to me, is kind of how I think about those kind of arguments about this issue.
Deb Markowitz brought up the content of that Bernie Sanders question in the CNN town hall. And, Deb, you mentioned that it felt like he hadn't really thought about it before. But it was also interesting the way the questions were framed, because it went from should people who have been convicted of felonies be able to vote, and sort of deeper and deeper into that question, until the final question was, should the Boston Marathon bomber be allowed to vote? And in some ways, you could consider that a sort of a prejudicial question, but it also gets to the point of, you know, putting a face or attaching a person to this question of, should people who we have convicted of doing abhorrent things and killing American citizens, who are also American citizens, let's remember, should they still be able to vote? And Alec Ewald, I'm wondering, you know, when you get to that point, it is that sort of visceral feeling that some people have about this person still has the right, even though they've taken away the lives of others, that gets people sort of in that core belief kind of place.
Yeah, I've thought of, I mean, the kind of marathon bomber framing, you know, there's some situations where extreme cases help clarify our thinking. And to me, this is not necessarily one of them. I mean, that said, there are two different, really different ways we can go from this point. So, for example, if your argument was only people convicted of domestic terrorism should be disenfranchised, there's actually a few European countries where that's the rule. So a judge can look at someone before them and say, you've been convicted of this, specifically a crime against the state, and I'm going to add this disqualification as an additional punishment for you. But that's not usually the way that argument is going. It's really more going towards, don't you feel deep hostility towards this person? Don't you want to exclude and punish this person? And now don't you also feel that way towards large other classes of people, which might or might not be sort of clearly defined? So to me, there's not sharp lines that make sense between different sort of the different kinds of things that people are convicted of. And we can sort of bat that around more if you want. But that, to me, that's sort of this slippery slope question where I don't see a principled basis for distinguishing between letting certain people convicted of certain offenses vote and not letting others vote.
Deb Markowitz, what do you think? I mean, where do you stand on that?
Well, you know, in our Constitution, as you mentioned, you know, as we started, they did say, okay, one crime, you know, you lose your right to vote, and that's election fraud if you let someone buy your vote specifically. And this is the extreme shouldn't define the general rule. And what's interesting is this debate today is really different. The the implications of the conversation are really different than when I first addressed this when I was Secretary of State so long ago, thinking about, you know, criminal justice and how we engage with people in prison and felons, et cetera. Really, now it's about racism. You know, the whole impact of felony disenfranchisement on modern communities of color is disproportionate and really unacceptable in my view. So throughout, if you look across the United States, last I saw it was well over 2 million black citizens, which is 1 in 13 African-American adults are banned from voting because of these disenfranchisement laws. And in three states, this was, I think, during Eric Holder's time, he focused on this. In three states, Virginia, Florida, Kentucky, it's 1 in 5 African-American adults can't vote because of this rule. So this, you know, it would be interesting to me to look at how did these exclusions, you know, come along? Is this part of the Jim Crow South? Is it, you know, where does it come from? But we know now there's this disproportionate impact, and I'm very proud that Vermont is not part of that statistic at all. But I think it highlights that this has been weaponized.
And when you say Vermont is not part of that statistic, you're speaking specifically about the disenfranchisement of voting,
exactly.
Because as we do know, Vermont certainly is part of the statistic of incarcerating more,
yes,
people of color than are in our general population.
Thank you for that clarification. Yes, in terms of, you know, having bias in our criminal justice system, I'm not saying that doesn't, mm-hmm, exist, right? That, mm-hmm, we do have data that shows that we have a problem here as well. But in terms of having that result in a large portion of the African American population being excluded from voting, and, you know, there's a partisan implication. You know, it's, you know, where African Americans are being deprived of this right to vote. It's a place where likely they would be voting on the Democratic side, and it's the Republicans that are trying to keep them from rejoining the rolls, as we've seen in Florida, where there was a vote by the people. They have an ability to bring a petition for a change in the law to reenfranchise felons, and now the Republican legislature is really working hard to undo what was done by the voters in the last election. You know, what's notable here in Vermont is it has not been a partisan issue. The last time there was a serious effort to put some limits on felon voting was in the early 1980s when Jim Douglas, who is a former Secretary of State, then Treasurer, and then Governor, was serving as Secretary of State, and he quickly put an end to the conversation, just coming out with a very strong interpretation of the constitutional provision as being exclusive, that's the only reason you could deprive someone of their right to vote is for election fraud.
Scott says if people are incarcerated, no, they shouldn't be able to vote. If you've paid your dues, yes. There are all sorts of things inmates aren't allowed to do that the free public can do. Norma is calling in from Hartford. Norma, what's your perspective?
I feel that if they have broke a law, committed a crime, they've given up their rights. They have to take their punishment. And I don't feel they should have any rights until they've done that and completed even their probation.
Norma, thanks for your perspective. Appreciate hearing your thoughts on that. Let's go to Winifred, who's calling in from Middlebury. Hi, Winifred. You're on.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I think that everybody who's a citizen should be able to vote. But I heard an ex-con talking on the radio the other day and saying that when he got out of prison, he had no idea. He couldn't get a job because he had no idea how to do the internet. He didn't know anything about technology. And I think we need to make sure that people have access to the information to make a good decision about voting.
Yeah, Winifred, good point. Thank you. So not just being able to vote, but being able to access information to make an informed vote. Appreciate hearing that perspective as well. Naomi's on the line with us from Moncton. Naomi, what are you thinking about?
Hi. I just wanted to add that the Nixon administration used the war on drugs to disenfranchise black voters who primarily voted Democratic. And we have this history of you know, the politicization of disenfranchisement, which goes on with race particularly, but also around class. And I think it's really important to understand that that people should not be deprived of the right to vote. And I also think we need the voices of marginalized people in the process.
Yeah, Naomi, thanks for sharing that. We're going to come back to this question. But before we do, let's make sure we chat with John, who's calling in from Grand Isle. John, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for having me. I pled guilty to a felony in another state, and in Vermont, that crime would not be a felony. But I'm very glad to be able to participate in the electoral process here in Vermont, especially because I feel it's extremely valuable for everyone to be able to rehabilitate themselves and reintegrate into society. And I see almost no better way to do that than to be part of the voting process.
John, do you think people should be allowed to vote regardless of what crime they're convicted of while they're serving their sentence? Or are you saying once you have proven to be able to rehabilitate yourself, then you should be able to vote?
Well, personally, I never served any time in prison. However, I believe that people, if they are able to access the information to be informed in the election and their crime is not related to voting itself, that right should not be limited.
So, in fact, it's not related to rehabilitation for you. It's related to a fundamental right that American citizens have.
That's correct. But it also is a very important part of being able to reintegrate into society once one is finished with their sentence. But while they're serving the sentence, it's important to be able to participate in the process because, as we've seen with laws changing with regard to marijuana, for example, sometimes society later on deems that these crimes were not indeed crimes.
Yeah. John, thank you for sharing your perspective. Interesting to hear from people mm-hmm. today mm-hmm. who have exercised their right to vote either while in prison like Randy or John, who's saying, look, you know, this is something that I value now that I'm out of prison or wasn't ever in prison, but now that I have had a felony on my record. Alec Ewald, come back to this because we're getting a lot of different perspectives here, mm-hmm. but we've also been talking about some of the ways the criminal justice system is weighted against people of color and how because of these different rules around the country, that also has an impact on elections and on enfranchisement.
Mm-hmm. And race is a very important part of the history of these laws. I mean, before the Civil War, of course, voting rights were very restricted generally on the basis of things like wealth and sex and age, and you had to live in the state for a year. And it shouldn't surprise us that back then, many states also, most states really, disqualified people if they'd been convicted of crime. And so these laws are actually older than the Civil War. But after the Civil War, really right after the Civil War and Reconstruction, many Southern states who were, as we know, actively looking for ways that what the sort of resurgent white majority, were actually minority in a couple states, but whites back in political power, were looking for ways to disqualify African Americans and manipulated, actually changed their felon disenfranchisement rules to target offenses that they believed that blacks were more likely to commit or that they believed that they were more able to convict blacks of committing. And so that's a really important chapter in the history of these laws. And those specific passages in state laws have been removed, but there's an ongoing debate in the courts and in legislatures about how to handle that history and how to face that history. And litigation lawsuits so far have not been successful in getting the federal courts under the Voting Rights Act or under constitutional questions to strike down those state laws. But in the legislative arena and in terms of lobbying, it's been a really important sort of part of the discussion.
Deb Markowitz, we got a question from Mark on our website who says, do all Vermont felons currently incarcerated get to vote in every election they're eligible for? And does this include the felons that Vermont pays to be housed out of state?
Yes, it does. So there is an effort to ensure that the felons who are now out, I think in Mississippi, if I'm correct.
That's right.
Have the opportunity to request an absentee ballot. And you had asked about you had promised to get to the practicality.
Yes, good. Take
and
us
I
there,
can
please.
Talk about that now if you like. And also answer the question about the informed vote. So, in Vermont, anybody who chooses to can choose to vote by an absentee ballot. Or early voting ballot, as they're sometimes referred to, or mail-in ballot, and you do that by, registering to vote in the town where you live. Now that's actually an interesting question because these prisoners are living in Mississippi or maybe in Springfield or up in Newport. And the way the law works is you register in the place where you last actually resided in Vermont before you were imprisoned. And so you do your registration. You can do it from prison, even though you're not actually physically located there, because the assumption is when you get out, you're going to go back to that town, even though you may not. You know, who knows what's going to happen when you get out. But that's where you have that right to register. And then you contact the town clerk by email or letter or by phone, and they'll send a ballot to you, which you then fill out. There was some interest and concern about, well, okay, how are people going to vote if they, aren't really connected to the community? And so the Secretary of State's office for a long time have put out voting guides where candidates, especially on the statewide ticket, make statements. You know, they provide statements that then gets published by the Secretary of State's office. And so we would also pair this voter registration drive and absentee ballot drive in the prisons with providing the voter information guide so that felons or prisoners who decided to exercise their right to vote had an opportunity to really know what they were voting for. When we first started this campaign or this effort, some of the communities where our prisons were in Vermont were at first concerned that everybody in the Springfield prison, for example, would register to vote in Springfield, which for a local election, town meeting election, could really change the results if they exercise their rights to vote, and that could be impactful. And out of that came the guidance about out of that concern came the guidance about residents and where people would register to vote.
And Deb, sometimes people are convicted of a crime in Vermont, but they actually didn't live in Vermont.
That's
so
right.
If they are previously from another state, do we have to follow the guidelines of that state?
No. In that case, they can choose to vote where the prison is. If that's the last place they resided, if they didn't reside anywhere else in the state, then the fallback is the place where the prison is.
Huh.
And so that was sort of a compromise that we came to in those early conversations.
Interesting.
Can I chime in quickly on the prisoners who are housed out of state? Because this is a fascinating sort of little detail in this discussion. The Department of Corrections actually has a policy document on their website that explains that the people who are indeed housed now in a private prison in Mississippi, a letter that went to them last fall in October of 2018 explaining to them that they retain your right to vote by absentee ballot in a primary or general election. And here's this, just to read this one line from this letter that went to them. A list of town clerks' addresses is available in the M Unit case manager's office. So if you picture somebody in prison, in a private prison in Mississippi, they're going to this, they could potentially go to an office there and have someone direct them the mailing address for their town clerk back in Vermont so they can register to vote.
Interesting. Let's see if we can squeeze in two more thoughts here, because this is something that, is sort of out there that people are thinking about. Victor's calling in from Shelburne. Victor, can you very briefly share your thoughts with us?
Sure. Basically, three points. I think folks who are convicted of premeditated major felonies like drug dealing, murder, kidnapping, things like that, should lose their right to vote. They lose their right to freedom, to be free. So I think the right to vote comes secondary to that. Second point is that I think recidivists should not be allowed to vote because they've been given a chance and they blew it. And lastly, I think you can't really not arrest people because of ethnicity. We all know the problems involved with that disparity, but the we're not treating the root of the problem. So, somebody commits a crime, they've got to be arrested.
Yeah, Victor, I hear you on that. And boy, this is a whole other show. And certainly we've talked before about implicit and explicit bias, and we'll come back to that again. But I do take your points and I appreciate them. Quickly, Anna from Weybridge, different perspective from you?
Yeah, hi. When we put people in prison, we say you've done a bad thing. They go to prison because I have done a bad thing. But we also say you are a bad person and you are ostracized from society. We banish you from society. In fact, we banish you from being able to call yourself a citizen with citizens' rights. That's a very basic prison mode, full of shame and difficult histories and already poor people.
Anna, I'm going to get you to the point here because we're actually out of time, but you, I'm guessing by your tone that you think that's wrong. So should people be able to vote in prison?
Yes.
No matter what. All right. Anna says yes, and we'll leave it there. Alec Ewald is an associate professor of political science at UVM. Deb Markowitz is a former Vermont Secretary of State. She worked on the absentee voting program for prisoners. She's now a visiting professor of environmental policy and leadership at UVM's Rubenstein School of Environment and Natural Resources. Boy, I appreciate both of you having this conversation that so many people are thinking about with us on the air today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.